is Paul Naj. This is WCOMLP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, 103.5 on FM dial. We're your community radio station. We're here for you. This is another edition of Touchstones, and I am your host. Today we are going to be discussing how does someone who has a spiritual vision to share with other people let it be known in a world which is basically runs itself in a business fashion on markets and marketing. So one of our guests today is Elizabeth. Elizabeth, are you there?
I am here. Hi.
Hi, how's it going? And you are now on the air, and we hear you loud and clear.
Awesome.
So this is Elizabeth. Now, you tell me how you want. Is it
Genco.
Purvis. Purvis. Isn't Genco an insurance?
No, usually there's a Genco olive oil in The Godfather.
Oh, that's what it is. Okay, so yeah, so but you're not related to The Godfather, are you?
No.
Or at least not that you're going to admit on the air, right? Okay.
<I don't> know.
and we also have my friend Philip Young, who is here as a priest in the Order of Melchizedek. And did I pronounce that right, Philip?
I believe there's a little bit of an L pronunciation there, Melchizedek, but Melchizedek.
Melchizedek. Yeah, let's not.
We're not quibble over that.
Yeah, he was a long-lived fellow, whoever he was, back there. So what we're going to talk about today is, for the lack of a better term, and then Elizabeth, why don't you tell us what we're really talking about? Metaphysical marketing.
Okay.
How do you approach this service in terms of your own stuff, Elizabeth?
I want to say that I approach it kind of like in a way like any other business marketing, because a lot of what I teach is proven business marketing strategies adapted for the holistic and metaphysical practitioner. And basically I, adapt them for, a lot of metaphysical practitioners are really, really wary of advertising, and they also are really overwhelmed by it. So I try to break things down and make it very step by step, and also let them know that they can market their businesses and get the word out about their businesses in a very authentic way,
mm-hmm.
And it's really, really about getting the word out about your service to the people that you can reach and the people you can help. That's what
right.
I think that marketing is. So that's my approach to it. But the stuff that I teach really is grounded in reality and very grounded in, this is what works.
And, well, also, we also have had in the last decade or so a tremendous revolution in marketing, in as much as that we really can, as it were, pinpoint our populations in a way that we never could before.
Oh, yeah. And there's many, many more avenues with the internet to reach people. Like I was, I'm preparing some content for the people on my list. I'm preparing some free videos for them. And one of the things I was talking about was how you build a virtual practice, because a lot of people, for the past couple of weeks, I spent a lot of time talking to the folks for my readers in my newsletter to find out where they're at and what they need and, the challenges that they have. And one of the questions that kept coming up was, well, I live in a small town. What do I do? And really, with the kind of technology that we have and the inexpensiveness of it, it does not cost a lot to do a telephone practice. It doesn't cost a lot to do virtual stuff. So I was talking about just this thing, and really, really fine, like you were saying, really pinpointing who we're talking to and being able to reach them much, much easier and less expensive than it's ever been.
Yeah, Philip, what's your approach to getting your message out? Now, I know that you are practicing astrology and you're also a Taroist. So how do you get your message out?
Well, one of the things that's been very successful for me has been the Body Mind Spirit Expo, which comes to Raleigh twice a year. And I use that as an opportunity to perform my practice, but also talk to people about what I do. Also, I'm a professional web designer, so I've been very interested in seeing how people are marketing themselves. One of the things I've observed from that end of business is that a lot of the practitioners have very poor representation on the web. And one of the things I oftentimes advise people about, it's better to have no website at all than to have a poor website. It doesn't benefit you because that's the first brush people have with your professionalism. And if that doesn't look professional, then you're not going to be very successful, I think, because what I've noticed is an expectation among the clients that I see, both at the Body, Mind, Spirit Expo and individually, that we carry, at least in our marketing sense, the same level of professionalism they would expect from a doctor's office or a lawyer's office, which means high-quality business cards, high-quality website, a good sense of who your target audience is, who you're trying to help, and being able to present yourself professionally at all levels. And so my experience has been, the way I market myself is I have a very high quality business cards that I hand out. I'm very clear about what I can and also what I can't do, or what I don't feel that my area of expertise is. So if someone says, oh, I know you're an astrologer, can you do my numerology? I'm like, no, you need to see a numerologist about that. That's not an area, or a rune caster, or if you're looking for someone who does Reiki, I know those people, but I don't have that practice, so I know what I can and can't do, and I try to be very, very clear about that with people when they meet me and ask me about my services.
Well, it also sounds like you can also be useful in networking, and I think you actually have a group that does networking, don't you?
I do. When I got started, what was interesting to me was I couldn't find a group of people that dealt with the professionals getting together, what I like to refer to as the teacher's lounge. And so I created a group called Avatars that I'm currently doing some rebuilding work with, to try to connect the people who do the work professionally to share resources. And so one of the things that I try to do is I try to meet other professionals. I try to have an experience with what their practice is, and then be available to recommend them to people who encounter me when I know those people need that individual's practice. So I operate from a theory of abundance. There's plenty of people in need, and I'm not always going to be the right service provider, but I do better service to people when I recommend them to the right person that I think can help them out.
Yeah. Elizabeth, who do you see your clients as?
I see my clients as metaphysical and holistic practitioners, and I know that's pretty broad.
Philip was alluding to the holistic. Holistic practitioners can often be people who are working in alternative forms of healing, let's say.
Yeah, exactly. I started out, I'm a tarot reader as well, as you know, and I have lots and lots of contacts in a tarot community. And so I went to them first. I approached them first. I served them first. I gave my first, my first talk to them. And as I started going along, I thought, okay, this is great, but I know that I wanted to broaden my reach a little bit and try to reach people who might not necessarily classify themselves as metaphysical, working strictly in the metaphysical realm on tarot or astrology. I mean, everyone's definitions of these things are different, too, which makes it a little tricky. But I had a couple of people who came to me, and they're like, well, I'm not really a metaphysical business. I do, acupuncture. And I started to realize, well, okay, I can help you too. But they were immediately turned off by that. So
they were turned off by it?
Well, they weren't turned off, but turned off is not quite the right word, but
they just didn't do follow through.
They didn't identify.
Yeah.
It wasn't a term, because one of the things about marketing, of course, is you want the people you're trying to reach to go, oh, yeah, that's me,
Right.
And the word metaphysical made them think of psychics, intuitives, tarot astrologers, which, of course, are exactly who I'm talking to as well.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, my strategies are very, very grounded in the practical and the reality. And so really the unifying thread, I would say, are people that are working in a holistic sphere, who are really, really coming from a place of service, and also really want to be authentic in their marketing.
I
and
think,
and get away from like the hype and they're hesitant with advertising, and I'm trying to show them that they can promote themselves in a way that really is genuine.
Yeah, actually, that may be a key term you mentioned there, which is service.
Mm-hmm.
You
yeah.
have a service. You have something. A message and or a practice that can help people.
Mm-hmm.
That may be the thing that motivates you. So okay, I have this something that can help people. Gain better insight. I'm also a tarot, so we'll say, and so I want people to know that I can help them with the tarot, think differently about themselves and the situations they find themselves in life. So the question is how do I find these people, and how do I find the people that I should be talking to, and how should I present myself? Those are two big questions. Let's talk about, I guess, how to present yourself first.
Well, I guess a question I might ask you, Elizabeth, is if I'm a practitioner, as Paul's saying, he's a practitioner, and we came to you and said, I would like to increase my business, I would like to be marketed better. What's sort of your strategy for getting me underway so that I can present myself authentically and that my advertising and marketing appears authentic to the people who encounter it?
The very first thing that I do, I have a system that I take people through. That's basically 8 steps. The first one is really being comfortable with marketing, because some people are more or less comfortable. I was actually surprised to find there's a lot of people in the metaphysical community that I've talked to that actually are okay. Like, they don't have a lot of sort of, anti-sales, anti-marketing issues. So that's the first thing, and making the priority. And then the next thing that I really focus on is narrowing who you're serving and what you do exactly. So your target audience, and really, really getting clear on what you offer your clients and what kind of results and benefits that they get. That's the very first thing that that I talk to them about. And then we turn that into a marketing message, that really is represents them.
Now, so far, I've counted 3. Am I on the right number?
Yeah, it's the first one I call it embrace marketing.
Yeah.
The second is your positioning, your unique positioning, which is choosing a niche, which is very, very powerful. Some people are they don't really want to do that quite yet, but that's okay.
Well, I mean, a lot of people feel like I want to serve everybody, and
exactly,
and that's,
I really encourage them to drill down.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's a lot easier to reach people when you're very targeted.
Yeah, well,
but
at least
part of the positioning
speakers,
that I really love, someone came up with this term, the unique service position, which I love.
Now, so, is that one's identity about this is what I do?
Yeah, it's about like what sets you apart, what makes you unique.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a USP in marketing, like a unique, a USP in marketing. I use unique service position so often now. I try to remember what the real acronym is. But basically, the answer to that question, why should someone choose you over everybody else out there? So the very first thing to do is really narrow in on that, like hone in on that, and hone in on who your ideal clients are. And a lot of people come to me and they haven't even done those two first steps. And they go straight to, okay, well, what do I write on my website? And what do I do on my website? And where do I advertise? And we can't do that part until you do the first couple steps.
The identity issues. Well, what are some of the results that you've seen when people are self-identifying? What are some commonalities that you see? Let's say for the holistic types or metaphysical types, they are different. We're usually a little different.
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Well, I was thinking in terms of people say they're unique, and what I find is that everybody says they're unique in about the same way. Well, I'm tuned into the universe in a profound sense. I have 15 certificates of initiation from 5 esoteric schools, and I'm a 33rd degree Mason. Blah 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 blah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's actually something that a lot of people struggle with, and they have to really work kind of work hard at. And I tell them to think about it and get it going. And you can always also, shift your focus later. And so it doesn't have to stay the same. But the first thing to do is to try to get a handle on it. So the amber stones, Walden Ruthven amber stone, are a great example of.
They're the principles of the Tarot School in New York.
Yeah, the Tarot School. No one else teaches the Rider-Waite material the way they teach the Rider-Waite material. You know, in my opinion, is one thing that really, really sets them apart. That really makes them unique.
Okay.
For example, does that help answer your question, Will?
Okay.
I can give you an example from the business card I just handed Paul. The thing that I found is to be able to identify with what my experience is with. For example, I'm adopted. So one of the areas in which I certainly feel very comfortable working with people is through adoption. If they've been adopted, I found my birth mother and my birth father. I had those experiences. So one of the areas in my priestly work that I'm happy to provide spiritual direction or spiritual friendship for people or people who have been through or are going through the adoption process. So that's a very concrete example of a way I can connect with people. I've also had experiences with relationships in very particular ways. I've gone through divorce. I committed adultery. I can speak about those issues from my own personal viewpoint. And then
polyamory too?
Polyamory as well. Yes, that's another one. Mm-hmm. Trying to identify those things in my own life experience that I recognize when I encounter someone, if those are the issues that are on the table, I have a much more capable ability to be direct with them and to engage them through a place of understanding rather than through a place of intellectual sort of sympathy. It's more a matter of an empathetic, I've been there, let's talk about that, here's how I work through it, here's some things that I can share with you, here's how I can help you think about these problems.
Also, he says on his card, I know you're at a disadvantage here, Elizabeth. He says, performing maverick weddings. I could just see these. I could just see these little cows wandering around in the pasture. Yes, we will marry you. Yes. Okay.
Well, part of that is, I found for my own practice, talking about niches, as Elizabeth was saying a moment ago, there's a group out there, atheists, they want to get married. They do. And if they don't want to use the justice of the peace, then they've got a tough negotiation to find the right person who is willing to work with them. People who want to do costume weddings. Not every priest is out there who wants to dress up and be in a Halloween wedding. I'm hoping that same-sex marriage makes it to North Carolina at some point. I'll be one of the first people who will be happy to marry people in same-sex relationships. So by maverick, I certainly mean outside the norm. That's who I want to work with.
Well, actually, people can have weddings. That wouldn't necessarily be acknowledged by the state. I mean, anybody can get married to anything these days.
Well, but I have the ability to be acknowledged by the state as long as it's a legal marriage. I can
I decide I want to marry my broom,
I'll step up for you.
Yeah, you'll step up for me, right? Yeah.
those are really, really strong examples of niches. That's really, really great.
So have we got to number four yet on your list? Which we want to get to all eight.
Back up.
These are the four. What is it, the eightfold path of marketing?
Right.
And it's out of Buddhism. The eightfold path.
We have embrace marketing. We have strategizing your unique positioning. Said, and choosing your ideal client. This is another thing I really like to encourage people to do. I'll just touch on this and then we'll move on.
That's good,
Is that they can choose who they want to serve.
That's right.
Is another thing. They get to pick and they can, they can decide ahead of time kind of to set out the intentions of the kind of people they want to attract and then, deliberately go out and try to attract them.
Yeah, I'm real happy with people who are happy to pay me.
Exactly.
That's exactly who I'm trying to attract. I'm not interested in attracting someone who's got to wrangle with me about the service that I'm providing.
Are you sure you don't want a chicken for this service? Now, I've got a nice live chicken in the background there.
Actually, in reality, I do try to offer a variety of different ways to exchange service. Money is just one of those ways, but I'm a big fan of barter. I mean, if someone has a service that they offer and they would like to exchange and we can have an exchange of service, I'm perfectly happy with that. If I'm hungry and the chicken's what I want for dinner, I might just go for the chicken. But
Exactly. It's about creating the win-win.
Exactly.
You know?
But I think a lot of people feel that I've been in conversation with, like, I've got to take every client that comes along because, by gosh, I just can't afford to pass up a client. And I think what happens is you get dregs when you have that. I mean, you take the path of least resistance and you get what comes with that. And so, you know, my attitude has been, hey, I want clients who are excited by what I do. When they're through with the session or the practice, they feel like, wow, I'm not paying you enough. I really should probably be paying you more. And I'm like, no, you're good. This is what I want to charge. So those are the clients I'm looking for.
Yep. No, that's it's really a big thing because people don't think about that. They don't realize how powerful that is to really set your intention and deliberately go out and craft your marketing to attract the people that you want to serve, and that means people that can pay you as well, you know. So that's number three. Number four is crafting that message, your marketing message. I call it your client magnet marketing message. You know, the thing, because I come from a direct response copy background. I'm all about reaching out and inspiring people to contact you, inspiring people to take action and actually, you know, pick up the phone and call you for a session or call you for more information. So
your position then is to try to get through your marketing to get people to directly contact you and say, I need your services for this.
Yeah, or
so that means you got to be real clear about what you're doing and who you're aiming for.
What was that?
Yeah, I said you got to be real clear in your copy about what you do and who you're aiming for, so that people can be real clear whether they're going to identify with it. Oh, I can see a need for that.
Hell yeah. Well, this is the thing. And, I mean, you can put in your marketing however they want to contact you. If you don't have to put in your marketing that you're going to be, you know, picking up your phone or whatever, if that's not what you want to do. Mm-hmm. But the point is that a lot of marketing materials I see, they have no reason really to get people into action and then actually contact you to book a service or find out more or whatever, and they make it very hard for people to contact you. So there'll be no contact information on the website, or it'll be buried, or, you know, it's like, have you ever wanted to buy something and you're like, I really want to give, like,
money, I want to buy this, and you can't find where to buy the thing. I ran into that the other day.
Right, you're like, please take my $300 and give me an iPod.
You know, Elizabeth, would you say that one of the trends you notice when working with people in metaphysical or alternative health is that personality-wise, they may be introverted as just a general population, and so, you know, part of it is overcoming the need to consciously extrovert yourself in order to get people in touch with you, which in some ways, again, being a person doing the marketing you're doing is to get people to recognize the professionalism of that piece being something you can hire someone who has a practice and a spiritual, if you will, a spiritual calling to do that. I mean, I would assume that part of the reason present yourself as a marketing goddess is because you see spiritually part of your goal is to get people's voices out, even if they as individuals aren't really capable of writing that rhetoric. And I guess one of the pieces and maybe it's further down the list, is you getting to know the individual enough to hear their voice and then to help them with the wordsmithing that makes their voice what their clients hear. Is that sort of what we're talking about when you're talking about point number four is, you know, if you were to meet me and to talk with me and maybe get service from me, and I said, okay, but, you know, I don't feel comfortable talking about myself as a selling point, you will do that for me if I hire you?
I actually view coaching and teaching. I'm moving away from actually writing the copy. So what I would do was help the person really, and I try to do this in my classes as well if we're not working one-on-one, craft a message that they are comfortable with.
So they have their own unique voice too, though, which is important, I think.
Yeah. And, I mean, you certainly can hire someone to do that. I'm just saying that I do less of the writing now, and I'm more about teaching people how to do this and how to pick up the ball and run with it. But that is very, very much a part of it. Like, you have to know yourself very well, you know. and like you were saying, you're like part of the process is getting to know the person and finding out what their message is. Yes, like I'll take them through that process. And the idea also, hopefully, is to maybe uncover strengths that they hadn't considered or that they're discounting or they're not paying close attention to. Does that answer your question?
Well, let me get it down to an even more concrete level. Let's say I go through your program, you coach me, and one of the things that I want to do as part of service with you is to say, okay, I've written my website copy.
Mm-hmm.
Read it for me.
So you would
provide me with a feedback to help me see if there was some place in the copy that while I thought I was presenting myself that I may actually be deterring a customer or a client rather than attracting someone.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I don't write people's copy, but I definitely, part of what I do in the process when I work with people one on one is give them really, really concrete feedback on the copy.
Okay, so where are we now? We're at four?
We're at four.
So what's number five?
Methods and creating your materials are the same. They're the same step.
Okay, and then so what's five then?
Five is what I call get out there with confidence and grace, and that's about getting yourself out there online and offline. So this is about the promotional strategies, like...
So obviously the internet is you know, basically a good place to post a highly interactive business card.
Yeah.
But beyond that, you might help to do some other ways to promoting yourself. Right?
Oh yeah, there's lots of other ways. One of my favorite ways is writing articles, which are great for positioning. And
getting them published in the local metaphysical reg or the holistic whatever it is.
I really try to steer people away from actually buying advertising if they can help it. I mean, some people, advertising is not a bad thing to do at all, but a lot of people come to me and they're like, okay, how can I do this at low cost?
Yeah.
Writing articles in your local metaphysical paper is a great way to do that because you're positioning yourself as an expert and you're also getting out there. And if you write them regularly, people start to see you. And again, they start to see you as an expert. It's like having a nice ad.
Well, and you know, that raises a good question for me to you in terms of how you might coach the people that you talk with. Let's say that I'm new to the game and I'm wanting to follow your process. What realistically should I expect in terms of time if I'm working positively and I've got good copy, I've created good marketing strategies, that going from zero to being to the level, and I don't know if this again is one of your later points, but when you think about intention, one of the intentions I also try to set is exactly how many people I want to see per year. How many people can I actually manage? I think that's another piece that I run into people like, oh, I'll take any client I can and as many as I can. I'm like, yeah, but you only got so many hours in the day. That's not going to be feasible.
Right.
You know, how many, and you know, it's just simply sitting down with a calculator. If I need to make a certain amount of money doing this practice, and I'm going to charge X amount for individual sessions, and I want to clear that amount by the end of the year, it's just simple division that says how many clients I've got to have in that period of time. But to get to that level, if I'm at, you know, right now trickling in clients, to get to the point where I say, well, I want to be able to see X number per week, What do you sort of tell people in terms of setting their expectations so that they have something to drive towards as a goal but aren't unrealistic to the point where when they don't meet those expectations within a short frame of time, they feel like, well, this isn't working. I just need to give up.
Yeah. No, I totally understand. I try to set very conservative, realistic expectations because the thing is it takes a while for things to get going.
After all, the best form of marketing is word of mouth, and that is probably also the most elusive initially to get started.
Yeah, it's also the long and slow road. What I tell people is I like to have people really focus for at least a good 6 months. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to wait 6 months to see results. A lot of times what happens is, especially on like the feast or famine cycle, right? You like market, and then you get all this business in, you know, and it's kind of like, sigh of relief. And then you don't market anymore, and then your well dries up. And so what I really what I take people to do is set up consistent marketing. So they're doing it in a consistent, sustained way. So that means, you know, you find the best networking events to go to, and you put them on your calendar, and you go to them. That means I really, really encourage people to have an email newsletter. So we try to get that set up, because that is a great mechanism for regular follow-up. So, but to get back to your question, how long does it take? Obviously, it depends on people's goals, and we do want to set people's expectations based on their goals and set their goals ahead of time. But I'm really, really conservative, and I say you know, you really need to concentrate on putting a good deal of energy into getting your marketing going for about 6 months. That's what I tell people, 6 months to a year. And they see results before that. But you know, I want to set that.
And I think the other thing is that you need to find a rhythm. You need a rhythm. I mean, with marketing, isn't something you just do and then you don't do. You basically need to find a rhythm that you're doing a kind of a flow of marketing all the time, no matter what your client base is. I mean, obviously, you can spend extra time marketing or write an extra article if you know you aren't getting overwhelmed with clients, but the fact of the matter is that it does make sense to keep a marketing rhythm going.
Well, it makes sense to write 12 articles once a month rather than write 5 articles 1 month and 0 articles the next month.
Yeah.
You know? And put out an issue of your newsletter once a month along with that article once a month, and then go and get out there and go to places where your clients hang out and actually talk to them about your service. And this is a hard thing to help people with, because a lot of people are introverted. But, you know, I am really of the belief that you can't just kind of sit in your hidey hole and not get out and meet people. You know?
Well, you know, another thing that you can also, this was my experience. This was an interesting thing that I ended up doing when I was teaching at the university at UNC Greensboro. I used to teach graduate students in the English department.
Right.
And I would encounter people who just absolutely had a deathly fear. One of the projects was you had to do a presentation at the end of the class. And I would, you know, I would meet students who would be like just in deathly fear of being up there. And I said, you know, in the real world, you can actually hire people to present for you, or hire people who can market for you. Or you might have a friend who is much more outspoken that you feel comfortable presenting you. And, you know, one of the things that some people may benefit from if they're really, truly introverted and this is a difficult thing for them to be out there, is find that person who supports you. I have a friend of mine who's an astrologer. His name's Randy Wasserstrom, and he is an outstanding astrologer. But Randy flies under the cover sometimes, and I'm one of his biggest promoters, because I know that Randy, that's not how he's going to operate, and I'm not going to be able to change that about him. But I recognize his talent, and I present that to people. And so what I did in this class was I told them, you know, if you can find someone that you would like to bring into the classroom and present your materials, I mean, it's your brilliant idea, but the presentation doesn't always require you to be the person in the front face if it's not a comfortable place, because then you can actually damage what you're doing. I think, you know, sometimes it's a matter of trying to find a good balance point for people, but get people to recognize that there's a variety of professional services out there that they can leverage. And to me, that's been, as a web designer, that's been my particular sawhorse, is I see these people who are like, I don't want to spend any money on a website. And I'm like, yeah, your website looks like you didn't spend any money on it. You picked up a book and decided HTML is easy and went for it. And now you've got a terrible marketing piece out there. So I wonder if that also can apply in terms of how you try to market yourself personally.
I think I don't have any experience with that personally, but what you're saying certainly makes sense. I think it would really depend on the person that you have doing the promoting for you, and how comfortable you are with them, and how, you know, how well they represent you, and how well they know your message as well, how well they know what your goals are and what you want to communicate about your service. But it seems to me like it's certainly an arrangement that could work.
Yeah, let me tell everybody here that you're listening to Elizabeth Ginkgo Purvis and Philip Young, and they are discussing how holistic practitioners and metaphysical practitioners in this day and age can let their services how they can get their services known, and how they can serve the community. And so we're basically talking about marketing. I think we're on point 5, right, Elizabeth?
I think, actually, we're a little further along.
Oh, okay. So what's point 5 and 6, then?
Okay, so point 4 was the magnet message and marketing materials. 5 was confidence and grace.
Confidence and grace. Okay.
Create. I'm sorry?
You said confidence and grace.
Get yourself out there with confidence and grace.
Okay, okay.
So that's, you know, the promotional strategies, advertising strategies.
Yeah.
The next point is what I call create relationships and win-win-win partnerships, because marketing is all about relationships. So it's the relationship that I'm really, really talking about is the relationship between you and your clients, or you and your potential clients, meaning you need to stay in touch. It's your follow-up system, basically, is what I'm getting at. And that's your newsletter and how you're reaching out to your clients and potential clients on a regular basis, because you do need to have that consistent follow-up.
And considering this day and age, I mean, you know, some people like to write, and but I think we're moving more and more into a post-literate age, and it might make sense that one of the ways you can market yourself too is having a little podcast that you do instead of a newsletter, or for that matter, a little YouTube presentation, you know, with visual aids, you know, or for that matter, send people cartoons, you know, things that they can look at and laugh at, depending upon what your style is, of course, you know.
The thing I would caution again, the point of caution I would make is that, like with a podcast, you want to be communicating with your clients and your potential clients.
Right.
You know, people, because these are the people that you're working with, and these are the relationships that are going to feed you and feed them over time. Because, you know, it's a lot of metaphysical practitioners and a lot of, business people in general. This is something that affects everybody. Very, very concerned about getting new business in the door. Very, very, very concerned. They're really concerned with getting people in the door, and then they serve them once or twice, and then, you know, they go away, and when there's no clients, they're like, oh my gosh.
And then and they start looking for the general new client again rather than going back to the stable clients. Everybody knows repeat business is the heart and soul of any business. You don't have repeat business, your business fails.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think it's important for, I think any of us that are providing service in these areas, certainly I can use astrology as a grand example because, of course, you know, a yearly update, your birthday, you mark it with a birthday party. It's a great opportunity to also use astrology as a way to look at what's happening with your position in the universe where you are and how you might view the kind of experiences you're going to have energetically over the next year. And so you want to encourage people at a minimum. I mean, whatever astrologer you see, is you're going to get your greatest value from that tool if you use it on a regular basis. And then, of course, it expands out from there into many different ways that you can use astrology. But I think practitioners do benefit from seeing that one of the things that they want to provide service, not so much in the sense of, I want to get your money, thank you very much, as more a matter of, when you're doing spiritual work or you're trying to work on yourself spiritually, it's always good to have a checkup, just like a health checkup. And whether that's, you know, you go to your acupuncturist on a regular basis to keep your alignment with your energy, or whether you go to see a Reiki master or you go to see a yoga instructor, that you realize that part of the process of spiritual development or of health development is that it's ongoing. And so people who are presenting their practice, I think, need to recognize that what they should be seeing as a service in the way they do service is how do they create a connection with people that they're going to hold perhaps throughout a lifetime.
Oh, yeah. And here's, I actually have a question for you. Would you say that astrology can, and I'm not an astrologer, and I'm not very familiar with, the one-on-one what actually happens in astrology practice, aside from, like, the yearly chart model, but isn't it the case that astrology could help people, you know, really go deep into certain areas of their lives?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know? So it's really about finding ways to provide more value. So I try to encourage people not to so much concentrate on the one-on-one session sort of overview, but figure out, like, a problem that they have that your modality can help them solve. So, if you had good experience with money issues, like say you came back from a financial disaster, or you've got a lot of personal finance experience in your life, like you were saying before, Philip, how you had, you know, divorce, and you've got this, and you're adopted, and you have these personal experiences. Well, so take that and figure out a way to use your modality to help people through that problem.
Exactly, and that's exactly what I do. I try to say, if you come with this particular problem, in my study of tarot and astrology, I look at those specific problems and explicate those for them. So yes, absolutely, there's a tremendous amount of depth. In fact, what usually overwhelms people, when I first started doing the practice, I would show people the full chart, which included the aspects, which are the lines connecting the planets, and it looks like a huge circuit board, and your head pops off. I mean, if you don't know what you're looking at, it's like, oh my God, how do I process this information? So Now, in my practice, I present a chart that has no lines in it, just to give, just to give people a sense of where the position of the planets are, and it's literally less information. And then, as part of the practice to show them their complexity, I say, now here's your chart without any aspects, and we're just going to talk about the placement of the planets and the energetic points and what they mean. Now, here's what you look like when all that starts to come together and interact with each other. And that's a little gentler than, you know, giving them something that makes them go, I have no way to be able to manage all this information.
So you don't overwhelm them with the full aspectarian chart.
Right. But I learned that by overwhelming them with the full chart at first. That's what I started out with. Because, again, I think sometimes as practitioners, it's very easy for us to forget that we spend all day studying this material. And, again, another area going back to I was a trainer with the web and with website design for a while at the university, and I would skip steps. I would be working with someone trying to explain them how to do something, and I would skip a step because I do the step 500,000 times. And I had to teach myself to, whenever I would write instructions, to make sure that I really paid attention to every step that I took, even the ones that were secondary in nature. And so I find, you know, especially with the best astrologers that I've encountered, they get away from astrospeak. You know, they leave that behind because that's the conversation you have with other professional astrologers. But with your clients, they want to know, you know, something about their personal lives that the astrology can help them with without going, oh, your Mars is over here in the fifth house, which means blah, blah, blah. And they're like, what was that Mars fifth house thing? I didn't understand.
Oh, yeah. That's something I really encourage people to, that we work on a lot, is using Nick the jargon. And I'm really, really glad that you brought up this the idea of, you know, forgetting that not everybody knows what you know. I was just talking about this. I just wrote an article about this in my newsletter. Because not only are you leaving the people that you're talking to in the dust, you know, and by mistake, it's not intentional, but you also, I've noticed with myself, if I forget, you know, if I start sort of taking things for granted, I will also forget, like, the value of that to other people.
Right.
And if you're not aware of the value of that to other people, you can kind of go, oh, well, that's no big deal. And then your prices start dropping. You know what I mean? Like, because that's actually the next step after relationships is how to charge what you're worth.
So, you know, now this is step seven, right?
Yeah,
how to charge what you're worth.
It's about pricing and how to really be confident in your pricing.
Okay, well, what are the considerations? I mean, Philip talked earlier a little bit about you know what he wants in terms of big vision, but what are some of the considerations you have somebody take in terms of what's the real value of somebody reading my tarot, for instance?
I think that totally depends on what they're doing. But you have to decide what that value is. Well, the client decides, you know, but you have to meet them and give them the value. You know, like an hour-long consultation about a really, really in-depth, you know, an in-depth issue or something very specific, or you're taking them through a specific process to solve a specific problem is going to be a higher value to them than, you know, the 15-minute reading. You know, even just like a check-in.
Well, that's the 15-minute reading is entertainment, and the 2-hour consultation is we're going to get some work done.
Right. It's really about...
You're going to be bit out of... You're going to not know yourself after you leave this place.
Right. But the point is to really hone down what that value is. And I don't think you can really do it without talking to your clients and finding out what the value is to them. But it's really important to do that fact-finding and to also do that work on yourself where you are really, really clear on the value that you're bringing to somebody.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And from there, once you've got that, you know, you can decide what your prices are. You can decide if you want to do barter arrangements. You can decide, you know, however you want to work within your comfort or what your goals are, what you want to give as far as service goes.
Right.
But the first step is to find... is really, really pinpoint that value as best you can. And I think that's very, very important because if you don't, then you start discounting the value.
Well, you know? actually, it was having gotten all my metaphysical initiations without pay, without direct recognition of pay, I think I put in a lot of service, but I never paid anybody any fees. They could say, well, you know, the wisdom of the ages is priceless. So how can you be putting a price on it? I says, well, I ain't putting price on the wisdom of the ages. I'm putting a price on your your focusing on the wisdom of the ages.
Yeah, well, it's a value exchange and it's an energy exchange. Yeah.
Absolutely, I think that's the key point. And what it for me, what I try to explain to people who have this conversation with me in the metaphysical community that are trying to break in, that you know, part of their struggle is, well, I don't feel confident charging, or I don't know what I should charge, or whatever it is. And I say, well, you know, what we want people to value is themselves, and what value we set on our work gives them a reflection. If I say that, you know, an hour session. I value my work at $100 an hour or $85 an hour for a session. You know, what does $85 an hour in your life look like? Is that, in some ways, it even presents the most basic question of, are you being spiritual about your own work? You know, because what you're trying to decide is that we are exchanging whatever value we put back into the universe, and that's an acceptable, healthy exchange. Now, if we lived in a society that didn't use money as a basis for representation of our effort, then we would be doing it through some other process of barter, whether it be, you know, you feed me dinner tonight for my time, or, you know, you help me with a project in my home, whatever it might be. But I think, unfortunately, the sort of the quick solution without some sort of effort associated with it, and sometimes paying, you know, if it's $100 an hour and you feel like I need 3 hours of session work and that's $300 and $300 is a big deal for me, you're probably going to pay attention to that session work. You know, you're going to be focused.
Exactly. I'm so glad you brought that up. Yeah. Go ahead.
No. That was where I was sort of dropping off, because I think, unfortunately, you know, when you give things away for free, people naturally discount its value.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that is one of the double-edged swords of the things, is that some of the greatest teachings that one is likely to find in one's life is going to be given to them for free. However, you're probably not going to be paying any attention to it.
Right. I mean, the difference, like you say, the difference between it happening to you in you know, circumstance, and you saying, I really need to figure out this problem in my life, and I want some guidance, and I need to go to someone who has experience, that you're probably not going to have that sudden free moment, because you're really trying to create an opportunity of your own epiphany, and that takes effort and investment, as opposed to, you know, all the great wisdom that my mother's mother gave me when she was baking me biscuits on Saturday morning that I came to understand much better when I was about 35.
Well, also in the spiritual friendship realm, which is could fit into this model that you're discussing, one of the practices of spiritual friendship is prayer. Now, both the friend and the friends are praying to the divine, but people define their prayer, the results of their prayer, you know, based on what their own perceived needs, you know, like, you know, some people say, well, I'm praying so that I really know that Jesus is in my life, so I really want an experience of Jesus in my life, right? So they pray for that, and at some point along the line, they're going to get a sense of presence of Jesus in their life. The prayer is going to get answered, you know, and then they're going to need to redefine their prayer. They redefine the relationship in terms of it, and that's an ongoing process, you know.
Well, one of the things that stands out for me in my practice is how I view it is, and I tell people this, is that one of the reasons I'm drawn to this practice as opposed to other practices is that I don't see people who come to me as patients or somehow lesser. My view of it is, you are in your own way a spiritual person, but maybe you have a particular need for a knowledge that I have or a practice that I've engaged in terms of learning critical thinking skills or learning skills for focusing the mind that you want my help engaging in. And we take a moment where I may take on a role where I am a teacher or a guide, but once we've accomplished whatever we've determined to be the process, we return to being equal people in the world. And then there may be a point where I need to learn something from you. Maybe it will be something mundane. Perhaps it could be something spiritual. And again, there should be an exchange of energy that goes on. But I prefer this work myself personally, because I don't view people as somehow lesser. That's just not, you know, your flock or you're damaged in some way, and let's fix you by some means. Rather, you have answers. I can perhaps give you some help, and let me see if I can do that for you.
So how do you see some of these issues, Elizabeth?
How I see my practice, I guess? No. Like, the thing that came to mind as you're speaking, I mean, the reason why I do what I do and how I really approach it is I want to see more holistic practitioners and metaphysical practitioners using their work, because it's been a huge, and getting that out into the world. It's like mm-hmm. that leverage again.
Yes.
If I show people how to get their stuff out in the world and how to use their gifts, then, you know, it grows. You know what I mean? And metaphysical work has been a huge, huge part of my life. And it's stuff I feel very passionately about. So it's my way of both empowering people to step up as well and step into that place of service, and also get these ideas and get this work out in the world.
So that takes us, have we got to number 8 yet? The last.
We have one more.
Yes, right, number 8. Which one is this?
And the last one is create systems so that you never have to worry where your clients are coming from. And that just gets back
you said
to what we were
create systems, you said?
Yeah, systems for your marketing.
Right.
So,
yeah, like good habits, you know.
Good habits. Yeah. It's about doing it consistently. So as I was saying before, you want to write, you know, one article a month and do that for 12 months, 24 months, you know, on a consistent basis rather than write 5 at a time. You want to send out your newsletter once a month or twice a month and do that on time. You want to go, you want to find the best, if you are going to do networking, you want to find the best places to go, to trial and error, and then find the places that really get results for you or are helping you reach the people you want to reach, and then go there consistently,
Yeah, well, actually, it's one of the things I've often found is interesting is that class takes an interesting toll here. And I'm really taking the position that that people who are relatively well off and use metaphysical services, and a lot of relatively well off people use metaphysical services, they're more comfortable with people who have the veneer of prosperity and competence, rather than people who look like they live in the shed in the backyard, you know. You know what I mean? Whereas, you know, and of course, then there's the sort of declassed, metaphysical practitioner who's, the person who might be living in the halfway house.
I'm really of the view that you can do much more good in the world, and you can reach many more people and help more people when you have abundance in your life. You know?
Sure.
Everybody's in this buzz. Of course, you know, I'm into the belief that, you know, of poverty of spirit, but, you know, it's just another way of saying God is the source of my abundance.
Well, you know, one of the things I say to people, we all probably come up with our own little mantras, but, you know, money may not buy you happiness, but it sure prevents a lot of misery.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the experiences that I share with people on becoming a parent was we were very conscious, my partner Betsy and I were very conscious about having a child, and one of the things that we wanted to make sure was that even if we didn't want to choose the most expensive education out there, we wanted to be able to afford the most expensive education that was out there, so that when it came to my daughter beginning school, we could go to whatever academy there was and explore it and realize, well, if this is the best fit for my daughter as a learning environment, then we have the ability to pay for this. But you know, we found, in fact, that wasn't the best fit for her. We found another environment, a Montessori school, Heartwood Montessori in Cary, and their rates were a third of some of the academies, but that was the right place. But the point I try to share with people is that we created an opportunity where we could make sure that she had the full range of choices, public school all the way up to the most private institution. And I think what you're saying about abundance rings true with me, in that when you can operate from a place that you're comfortable, then it's much easier to reach across the spectrum and also make decisions on the fly of saying, if I meet someone and I see that they need my help gratis, and I recognize that they're going to walk away with that with as much understanding and connection as someone who pays me $100 an hour, I can make that decision comfortably because I don't need every client to pay me $100 an hour, because I have a good practice, or I've set my life up in such a way that I have flexibility to make good choices along the way. The other thing I added into my priestly practice was for, as you say, Paul, people of a class where $100 is a, a buck's worth.
Yeah, that's not, nothing.
It's nothing. You know, one of the things that I offer is for them to pay for sessions for people who don't have money. And I've set it up to where that can be an anonymous process. It can be a process where you actually connect with someone, whatever you want it to be. But if the service, you know, for you to pay for the service is really a pittance, and you want to be able to offer someone who that might be a struggle for, then, you know, we negotiate that as a spiritual contract as well as a financial contract to say, this money will go in reserve. And when I encounter someone that I think, you know, has that need and needs that service, then we'll pull from your money that you paid, and I'll let you know if you want to be let known, or maybe you are a person who just feels like, take it, and I trust that you're going to do good work. And part of that is also having that attitude of trust when working with people. Again, thinking about the clients you have and a theory of abundance.
Mm-hmm. I like that idea. That's really great.
The other interesting thing here is that I think the long-term goal that we all need to look at this is really service. This is making whatever wisdom tradition that one practices, making it available and practical, not only for yourself, but you're also giving it to others.
Absolutely.
And the point here is it's a form of gift that we need to make. Some aspects of gifting and exchange is just the nature of life. We have to do relative exchanges in a lot of things. But ultimately, what you're giving is priceless, and it is a gift, and it's always a gift, no matter what the exchange is. And if you keep that idea of service and process, then you can also say that the only person that is, you know, that I'm really doing this for is the the big factotum in the sky or whatever.
Well, I certainly want to thank you, Elizabeth, for the work that you do, because I think practitioners who are struggling, if they aren't clear about what they're doing and they're not getting what they feel they need to make their practice successful, then you start cutting corners in how you do your practice, and that's not healthy at all.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Now, Elizabeth, though, I will have it on the webpage where people will be able to download this podcast. Why don't you tell people who don't have access to that what your website is?
My website is marketinggoddess.com.
Marketinggoddess.com.
Yeah. It actually currently redirects to another website, the first site I set up, but the permanent URL will be marketinggoddess.com. So if you use marketinggoddess.com, you will always find me.
So I'm really happy that you joined us today, and apparently your phone did hold up after all. I'm very happy about that.
Yeah. It did. No, I had a great time, and thank you very much. Thank you, Philip, for your contribution as well.
Okay.
And really great talking to you both.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to talk to you.
And this is a special show of Touchstones, which deals with religious and spiritual experience. And yes, sometimes I'm afraid to say that we have to take our experiences and share them in such a way that it requires a little bit of a system. And so we discussed that today. For those religious, spiritual professionals or soon-to-be professionals out there, when you want to get serious about it, remember the marketinggoddess.com. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So this is Touchstones, and I'm Paul Nagy, and I've been talking to Elizabeth Jenko Purvis, Marketing Goddess, got Tom, and Philip Young, and your website is?
It's a little more difficult to remember. Actually, what I tell people is just go into Google and type in Philip Young, PhD, and you'll get all of my websites from Google.
Okay, so Philip Young, that's with one L, PhD. So what did you learn to fib about, as they say? Okay. So this is WCOMLP, Chapel Hill, Carrboro, your community radio station, 103.5. Thank you for joining us again, and we will now return you to the ongoing music.
KSVR FM Mount Vernon, and in Wyoming, KOZI FM Laramie.